7, did they really fool it? And a bunch of other cover up. Your child's future was the first to go with budget cuts. If you think that hurts, then wait, here comes the uppercut. The school was garbage in the first place. That's on the up and up. Keep you at the bottom, but tease you with the upper crust. You get it, then they move it, so you never keeping up enough. If you turn on TV, all you see is a bunch of what the fuck. Do this dating so and so, blabbering about such and such. And that ain't Jersey Shore, homie, that's the news. And these the same people supposedly telling us the truth. Limbaugh is a racist, Glenn Beck is a racist. Got the strip with getting bomb, Obama didn't say shit. That's why I ain't vote for him. Next one either. I'm a part of the problem. My problem is I'm peaceful, and I believe in the people. Yeah.
It's a lie.
Deserve it. Jihad is not holy war. Wet that in the worship. Murdering is not Islam, and you are not observant. And you are not a Muslim. Israel, don't take my side, cause look how far you pushed them. Walk with me into the ghetto, this where all the kush went. Complain about the liquor store, but what you drinking liquor for? Complain about the gloom, but when you pick a broom up, just listen in the pot, ain't gon' make it stop. A rebel in your doubts, ain't gon' make it out. If you don't become an actor, you'll never be a factor. Pills for millions, side effects, take them when the pain fell. Wash them down with diet soda, killing off your brain cells. Crooked banks around the world, we're glad to give a loan today. So if you ever miss a payment, they can take your home away. All the violence, fear is such a weak emotion, that's why I despise it. We scared of almost everything, afraid to even tell the truth, so scared of what you think of me, I'm scared of even telling you. Sometimes I'm like the only person I feel safe to tell it to. I'm locked inside a cell in me, I know that there's a gel in you. Consider this your belling out, so take a breath and hell a few. My screams is finally getting free, my thoughts are finally telling down.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
And good morning, CKLM listeners. Check, check, check. It is the 24th day of February, 2011. You are listening to CKLM's Rude Awakening here on CKLM 88.1 FM. CKLN.FM and Rogers Cable Box 947 on your cable box. One second, please. Just a couple of technical difficulties, and then we're going to get right into today's special show. Check, 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 check. Okay. Today, as our special guest in studio, we have filmmaker Brian Law. Mr. Brian Law, the director of United We Fall, a film about the border security and trade security range between Canada, America, and Mexico, leading to a North American Union. Some of this information is now finally in the news here in 2011 and the late part of 2010, and the director of the upcoming film Into the Fire about the Toronto G20 martial law experience between the protesters and the policies that happened last summer. Brian, say a few words. All right. I'll tell you, for the purpose of this conversation, we're going to be sharing this microphone. I don't know what's happening here this morning.
Okay.
So, Brian, again, explain a bit about you, Into the Fire and about your role in it.
On my role in Into the Fire is I'm the producer and editor of Into the Fire. So there's three of us that are working on it. Dan Dix is the director, Stephen Davies is the producer, and I'm the producer and editor of the upcoming film Into the Fire, which basically tries to catalog and outline all of the stuff that happened at the G20. So we were lucky enough to get a lot of footage handed to us by people in the city who had uploaded videos to YouTube, or even people who were here to cover it internationally who were able to upload some stuff. We saw it online, contacted them and said, you know, this is a vital part of the story. We'd like to get your original footage. And, you know, people have been very receptive to this so far. And so we have over 100 hours of footage that we've been cataloging, going through, making notes, trying to basically figure out exactly what happened, starting on the... roughly on the Wednesday before the summit, all the way up to covering everything that happened in the months following, and we're still kind of assembling some bits of the story. And some exciting new news with this film is that recently I filed a Freedom of Information Act to get some footage released of Charlie Veach of the Love Police, who was arrested. He was one of the only two people arrested under what was called the Public Works Protection Act. It was a piece of 1939 legislation. It was a war act that was passed to protect public works such as courthouses and civilian buildings from being infiltrated by German spies prior to World War II. This act was updated with something that was called Regulation 233.10, which allowed the police to identify anybody trying to enter the gates of the perimeter. But the chief of police ended up lying to the public and telling them that it was anybody outside of 5 meters or within 5 meters of that fence, which turned out not to be true. Charlie Veach was one of the only two people arrested under this act and subsequently spent over 21 hours in incarceration for not showing his ID and was strip searched 4 times. So I'm right now in the process of getting his footage released via Freedom of Information Act, and I've received about 11 minutes of it so far.
Now, that's amazing. And Charlie Veach is an activist with the Love Police out of England, essentially a We Are Change style group. They go out there to spread some love and spread some truth and to basically even approach the police with love, offering to hug them at times. Now, Charlie's a smart guy. He's a sharp guy. He's a quick guy. He's got a pretty good sense of humor. So he may be ironic or sarcastic at times, but he's certainly not malicious enough to be treated like that. Brian, before we get into all this, I want to ask you one question. Just tell us a bit about yourself, and then we'll get right back into your personal experiences at the G20 and talk a bit more about what's going on in the world. But who are you to be interested in these things? And by extension, you know, why do you think other Canadians should be interested in matters like trade and security policy and martial law taking place in or near the city you grew up in?
Well, I was originally born in Thornhill, so just north of the city, and I lived in southern Ontario in various towns and communities throughout my entire life, usually small towns such as Holland Landing, Ontario, or Sharon, Ontario, is where I attended most of my public and high school. Newmarket as well as another town that I've lived in and attended high school. I went to college in Thunder Bay at Confederation College, which was, for anybody out there who wants to get into film, I strongly recommend that you look into Confederation College. They shoot everything on 16mm film. They get you, you know, not to plug the new film, but they kind of throw you right into the fire with it and just basically say, you know, here, we don't necessarily care about, you know, what you have in terms of book smarts. Here's a camera, here's some film, and what we're going to expect you to do at the end of the day is, you know, give us a film back, because that's what you're there to go and do. So within a month of being there, we were shooting some films on 16mm film, and it's just a really great 2-year course that kind of gets you a base knowledge of the entire industry. From there, I left school thinking I was going to make, you know, horror movies. Sorry. Make horror movies, and then what ended up happening was I just kind of fell into documentary because I realized that, you know, with documentary you can kind of work a little more solo on that. Doesn't cost as much money. You don't have to hire actors, and I found the topics that I was able to kind of tackle very interesting, And this led me over the years to get involved with more politically active stuff. And I never thought, you know, when I was in school, I'd be getting involved with anything kind of politically active until I started reading about some of these trade deals that were going on, border harmonization. And I realized that, you know, when a person like me is being left out of the loop, and that includes everybody else out there being left out of the loop as to what's going on in our own country, it is going to affect our future and what, you know, what we're going to be able to do in terms of raising our kids in our country, and what we can do in terms of having rights in our country at all. So I felt that it was important as an independent media outlet to get involved with this, and that's when I started working with Dan Dix and Stephen Davies at PressForTruth.ca.
That's fantastic. And for you folks out there in CKLN Radio listener land, it is the 24th day of February 2011. This is CKLN's Rude Awakening. Your host BK, a.k.a. VJ, here with Brian Law from PressForTruth.ca, director of United We Fall and the upcoming Into the Fire documentary. You're just getting out of school. You're thinking you're going to go for some commercial aspirations as a director, direct horror movies. And yet you decide to, you know, to figure this out. Was there anything that triggered that? I mean, what got you into this? Because so many kids coming out of college right now have no interest in getting political. And so many people in general have no interest in getting political, you know, with respect to our culture. You know, was there any specific triggers there that got you, you know, interested in this avenue? I mean, basically, none of us would be doing this if it wasn't worth doing, if it wasn't worth, you know, bringing this information out to light. But were there any triggers?
The first film that I ended up working on out of school, the first documentary, was actually a documentary about the development of children into adult psychopaths. So when I started researching into this, I realized that our culture kind of harbors and encourages in certain jobs and certain businesses, especially the corporate world, encourages behavior that would be, you know, right in line with antisocial personalities. And it started getting me wondering why it is that we're encouraging this type of behavior in society, and why it is that our society is dominated by things like consumerism and materialism and marketing, and just, you know, you have to buy the brand new, you know, iPod, you have to buy the brand new device that's out there. Every week they're marketing something new to us. And I just found that it was kind of taking away from our humanity and making us more consumers than humans. And this was like my first kind of foray into documentary filmmaking. And from there, I guess my big kind of rude awakening was seeing footage from Montebello, Quebec that my roommate showed me and basically said, you know, your dad's a cop. Take a look at some of this stuff that's going on in Montreal or in Montebello with the police there. And the police were undercover trying to incite a riot. So it was my first kind of experience seeing the police act in a way where they were trying to actually incite a riot instead of protecting people from rioting. And that kind of shocked me and kind of opened my eyes to the fact that, you know, the police are out there to go and protect people, but there are some, you know, criminal aspects inside of those organizations. And we're seeing that right now after the G20 and with all the SIU investigations that are going on right now. There's a lot of articles being written about the Special Investigations Unit and the fact that the chief of the SIU is now complaining. There's an article just yesterday in the Toronto Star about the Toronto Star got 600 letters via Freedom of Information Act release that clearly show a trend of the various police departments not cooperating with the SIU at all. And this is kind of troubling because we want oversight, we want legitimate oversight going on with the police force, and we don't want a police force that's going to end up being like something that we're going to see overseas, very oppressive and draconian. We want a police force that's going to protect people's rights and uphold the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which is what they took an oath to uphold when they became police officers.
Absolutely, and so that was your awakening. For people out there who don't remember this, in 2007 there were protests in Montebello, Quebec, against the Security and Prosperity Partnership, and that was an agreement signed in 2005 to basically harmonize the policies of Canada, America, and Mexico, and create a North American Union by stealth, similar to the European Union. And so when you see, you know, things like the dollar parity, when you see things like Family Day in Ontario being the same as President's Day in the U.S., recently introduced by Dalton McGuinty, Premier of Ontario a couple of years ago, when you see things like public admissions of Canada and the U.S. agreeing to use each other's troops in the event of civil emergencies. An article that just came out a couple of days ago in the Ottawa Citizen, picked up by Canada.com and not that many other news organizations, frankly, you can see all the piecemeal elements of the North American Union policies, including a harmonization of the policing policies, which you can see. So a lot of times people will go to, say, Infowars.com and see what's happening. And a lot of Canadians, quite frankly, Brian, you know, are happy to say, oh, at least we're not as bad as America. You know, I mean, the economy's bad, but it's not as bad as America. You know, our health care, we got to wait a long time for it, but it's not as bad as America, where they don't get any. Well, the thing is that with the harmonization of policies, whatever's happening over there will likely happen over here. And so that's part of the SPP. And then in Montebello, Quebec, there were agents provocateurs there, where basically three giant muscle-bound, police officers, Sarah-tated Quebec police officers, pretended to be three skinny teenage underfed anarchists, were wearing masks, were holding rocks, and were called out by a union leader at the front of a protest line, facing off with a police line of armed riot police. Sarah-tated Quebec riot police, and then for safety, after the three agents provocateurs were found out, they actually dove behind the police line. So it's amazing. Anarchists and cops usually don't get along well enough for three anarchists to dive headfirst into a line of cops and for protection. So all of that came out thanks to great documentary film work by independent journalists and a lot of coverage on YouTube, and eventually admissions by our government that in fact there was infiltration there. So you were basically shocked to see the levels of the levels that the state would go to in Montebello, Quebec, to crack down on our right to peaceable assembly, something that's in our Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, we have a right to get together and to peacefully protest. And if you don't have that right, that's one of the fundamental rights of a democracy. How can you petition your government if you can't go onto the street with a sign that says, I disagree with what you're doing. I'm not going to bust windows. I'm not going to hurt anybody. But I disagree with what you're doing, and I want changes made to the system. And the SPP was just ended up being an outright failure on their part, because they only let the 30 most powerful CEOs into the meeting, 10 from each country, in what they called the North American Competitiveness Council. And they only let those people in to discuss the policies that were being implemented with the SPP. So when the public found out about this, there was a big holler and a big cry against it, and essentially the SPP kind of went null and void. And when Obama came in, he started referring to it as the North American Leaders Summit. Now what we have recently coming to fruition is after the Secretary of State Hillary Clinton came and made a visit to Canada, there was some talks about possibly a North American security perimeter that they would like to start building. Well, this is now open fact after Obama paid a visit, Harper went down and paid a visit to Obama down in the States. One of the things that they discussed was creating a new North American security perimeter. And one of the most troubling aspects about this, something that completely shocked me, is that they're very open now about discussing sharing private information about Canadian citizens with the Department of Homeland Security. Now, most people I know would just say, look, I don't have anything to hide, so I don't care what they share with people over there. Well, hypothetically, let's say you were 17 and you had an arrest for, you know, marijuana, for example. You were arrested when you were 17 for doing something stupid. You try to go into the United States of America and that's still on your record, they can deny you access into the United States. And the fact that the Department of Homeland Security is going to have these types of records on you when you try to enter the states is just a troubling aspect. We have a privacy commissioner here in Canada, and I find it just grossly disturbing that private information about a sovereign country could be so cavalierly handed over to another foreign intelligence agency, and vice versa. If there's, I don't know how far this radio station goes, but if there's Americans listening as well, then the Canadian Border Services Agency might have some information about you trying to enter Canada as well. So this entire Big Brother apparatus that's being set up is a very troubling trend. I mean, if anybody's been paying attention, Walmart has a deal with the Department of Homeland Security down in the United States to monitor people in its stores for what they call suspicious activity. They don't define what suspicious activity is, but if they're watching you in their stores with their 800 CCTV cameras and they see something suspicious, They will record that, report it to the Department of Homeland Security, and then you could be put on notice as a person that engages in suspicious activity, perhaps not buying enough items made by slave children overseas. It could be considered a suspicious activity now. So it's a very troubling trend that's being developed in specifically in America, but Canada seems to be so complicit with agreeing to these new policies and trying to harmonize a North American security perimeter in what I believe is just based on lies in the first place. It's all based on, you know, September 11th, and we want to protect people from getting into the country and hurting us again. But I mean, you know, overwhelmingly now, the evidence of 9/11 suggests that that was conducted in part or in whole by elements of the U.S. government. So we need to really approach this with some caution and not allow ourselves to be swept up in the fear game of possibly being attacked again and handing over our rights and our freedoms to a group of people who are going to promise to protect us.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. We are speaking with Mr. Brian Law, director of United We Fall. You can see more about that at pressfortruth.ca. And United We Fall was recently at a film festival in Wisconsin. So we're going to talk about that, about Brian's experiences along with his colleague Dan Dix at the film festival in Wisconsin and at the protests in Wisconsin coming up shortly. Right now, though, I'd like to take us to a brief clip of Catherine Austin Fitz. She was former Assistant Secretary of Housing at the Department of Housing and Urban Affairs in the United States. She was on the Alex Jones Show, and she was talking about how, in America, Canada, you know, we're all the same. Pretty much people around the world are the same, where we kind of know what's going on to some degree, or we know at least something is going on, and we kind of don't. And yet, according to Ms. Catherine Austin Fitz in her conversation with Alex Jones from the 17th day of February, because we all sort of know what's going on, and because we all interact with the system in a million different ways, there are a million different things we can do to change it. And so she's going to go through a bit about that, including changing some of our voting choices, our buying choices, our spending choices, including refusing to pay taxes that we find to be illegal or unconstitutional. So this is Ms. Catherine Austin Fitz from the Alex Jones Show for a couple minutes, and then we shall return.
Not a sustainable system. We've all avoided it. It's not just the elites, but we've avoided it too. One of the reasons the politics have worked the way they've worked, Alex, is because we've said, give us more money, we don't want to change. And every year we've been able to do that in the governmental mechanism.
Well, that's like a bass biting down on a purple worm. I mean, we're certainly the ignorant fish that's biting into the hook. But I'm talking about where that hook...
We're not ignorant, Alex. I mean, the way you get power over, to solve a problem, you need power. The way you get power is you take responsibility.
I agree.
And the reality is, let's look at the money. Whatever the American government is doing, every one of us is financing it by paying our taxes. Okay?
Yes.
Every one of us is financing it by putting money in pension funds and not... having a position on where it goes. Everyone of us is donating money, including tithing to churches who are supporting and going along with all of this. Every one of us is shopping or banking at the banks and the stores that are doing that. Okay? If you look at how our money works, household by household, county by county, we have the power to say, you know something? We're not going to finance this anymore. If you, my church, wants my tithe every month, and you've got to change, what you're doing and how you're doing it. I'm not just going to pay taxes to a government that's running drugs. I'm going to go get a lawyer, and we're going to battle this out in court, or we're going to organize locally and do a local escrow for tax money, as long as you're running the government on a legal basis and trains are going out the back door. So, in other words, we're all participating in this. And we're all complicit in it, and it's by seeing that we see the opportunities to start to really make serious change.
And we're back, folks. Again, that was Ms. Catherine Austin Fitz, a guest on the Alex Jones Radio Show, and a dynamic wonderful personalities, similar to Ms. Natasha Von Castle and Nyla, who left here recently after just giving you 4 hours of soul food. So hopefully you did enjoy that, and hopefully you did enjoy hearing Ms. Catherine Austin Fitz. It's people like that who have an amazing sense of clarity and optimism and sense of courage that can really inspire us today. So I strongly recommend you check out the work of Catherine Austin Fitz. She used to manage billions of dollars as part of Solari Investment. So she's no chimp here. She's a smart cookie, and she's one of the people who can help explain ways for us to get out of this mess. When it comes to dealing with the problems with globalization we face, including consolidating power, a global recession, and a largely unresponsive political system made more responsive by the information war. And so I got to say, for those of us out there who are fans of this genre, we're fans of Alex Jones, veteran filmmaker and broadcaster at Infowars.com out of Austin, Texas, and now a worldwide leader in the Patriot movement fighting for freedom. I heard from you and Dan that when he saw United We Fall, he was like, I got to carry this movie. I got to order more copies, and I got to sell a bunch because people need to see this information. So you've got the InfoWars stamp of approval on United We Fall. Tell us a bit about the film. Tell us a bit about the film festival in Wisconsin. Tell us a bit about reactions to the film, just so people understand they can see United We Fall, which is 3 countries, 2 sides, and 1 union, and why you would say United We Fall instead of Divide We Fall.
I mean, united, working together, people are going to succeed. I mean, I don't want to put out the impression that people uniting together is a bad thing. The idea of the name of the film is that uniting the 3 countries together is going to cause all 3 countries to fall through downward harmonization. United We Fall took us about 2 years to make, and when we first started off making this project, I kind of didn't have any real direction on it. I didn't really know exactly which specific topics I wanted to cover. I just knew that, you know, there were a lot of things out there that I was kind of concerned about after seeing that SPP footage with the Montebello provocateurs. I knew I wanted to get involved in some way, and my kind of entry into it was I ended up interviewing Dan Dix and also a man named Patrick White from Conspiracy Culture, and you can visit Conspiracy Culture at 1696 Queen Street West. It's an amazing store. You can walk in and get books that you can't find anywhere else in Canada. So it's a great store. You can visit their website at conspiracyculture.com and order books, DVDs as well. And I ended up interviewing both of those individuals, very long interviews, and I kind of touched on a lot of different topics. And after that, I lined up an interview with a man named Herbert Grubel out in Vancouver, B.C., and I flew out to go and interview him. And Herbert Grubel wrote a paper in 1999 called The Case for the Amero. And the Amero is the proposed currency for the North American Union that would be implemented over a number of years, much like the Euro was implemented over a number of years through the European Union. And he proposed different ways that our countries could harmonize their policies and eventually implement one currency for all 3 countries that would be, the power of that printable currency would be given to the Federal Reserve Bank, and the Americans would be given 70% control to start over our banking policies. Now, the Americans deregulated their banks. That's why we had a global financial collapse. They deregulated their banks, and the banks were lending out for every dollar they had, they were lending out $40 that they had, and there was no regulation on this. Canada didn't deregulate their banks, although Canada doesn't really print off any of our own money anymore. We borrow a lot of our money from the IMF, which is lent to us by private bankers at interest. So after I interviewed Herbert Grubel, I decided that this was kind of the angle that I wanted to take on the film and talk about North American integration. So we ended up lining up interviews with Bilderberg members, former Deputy of Prime Minister Canada of Canada, John Manley, and we talked about a variety of issues that I haven't really heard them talk about too often. And, you know, none of these interviews were obtained through lying or anything like that, just contacting the individuals. And instead of saying, you know, I want to interview you about the North American Union, it's all in how you phrase the question. You just say, I want to interview you about North American integration or harmonization of policies. And they say, absolutely, that's exactly what I do. The moment they hear the word North American Union, they put their conspiracy theorist flag up and they don't want to do an interview with you, even though the questions are still going to be relevant and they're still going to be the same. So we went down recently to Wisconsin and showed the film at a film festival. It screened twice, and the reactions from the crowd were were really great. I mean, people seem to really like the film. They like the information. I mean, there's some scary stuff that we talk about in it in terms of, you know, what would happen in terms of harmonizing our border policies. And, I mean, it all depends on where you're coming from in this. If you own a business, a multinational corporation who could stand to benefit from hiring cheaper labor in other countries and being able to ship your products around North America free of charge, and, you know, it's going to probably be very beneficial to you. But if you're a mom and pop's operation or an individual who doesn't really have any sort of trade experience or any interests in trade, I mean, the promise for you is going to be easier travel. So if you would like easier travel, I mean, yeah, there's a certain benefit of that for you as well. But the things that concern me are the downward harmonization, and a perfect example of that is through the SPP. Canada used to have very stringent policies on what types of pesticides we could put on our food. And as part of the Security Prosperity Partnership, we started harmonizing certain regulations. And one of these was the pesticides we put on food. Well, we agreed to concede to the U.S. rules, and the U.S. rules are not as stringent as ours. So now we have certain pesticides on our food that we're eating that, as of 6 or 7 years ago, we weren't allowed to put on our food. And certain additives to our fuel that we used to not be able to add into our fuel, well, with things like NAFTA and the investor trade agreements, they can sue our country if they feel that it's infringing on their trade and their ability to continue to make money. Corporations can now sue a country if they don't feel they're getting the proper treatment that they deserve under NAFTA. So these downward harmonization trends are very concerning, because, you know, if they're planning on harmonizing us together, what history has shown is that they're not going to harmonize us to the highest possible standards. They're going to lower us down to lower standards because it's going to be more profitable for business.
Absolutely. And right now, and even with respect to travel, I mean, obviously it's getting more difficult to travel in many ways because border security is getting tight. They're demanding more biometrics, and none of the proposed benefits of a North American Union are really being realized. You know, they say there's benefits, but what are the benefits in having trilateral working groups made up of CEOs of Canada, America, and Mexico deciding on public policy and then informing our politicians of what they are to pass in legislatures at various levels of government across the three countries to harmonize these policies? So essentially, we're being run by independent groups of corporate CEOs telling our politicians what to do. And we wonder, Brian, it looks like many of our politicians are working hard. It just doesn't look like they're working for us. So what's going on here? It looks to me like the harmonization of our countries combined with international policies, international law, international trade agreements are all leading to something. You know, and I recall in the film, I think you asked, it was Robert Pastor, the architect from the Council on Foreign Relations, the document called Building a North American Community. You asked him about a world government. What were his thoughts? What was his reaction, the guy who came up with the idea of harmonizing this part of the world to possibly fit into a world government?
Well, his answer on that initially was he paused for a long while to think about it, because, you know, I think his initial reaction would have been to kind of laugh it off as conspiracy theory, but his final answer was, you know, that nobody right now wants to see a North American Union, and we're not going to see it in our lifetime. What he didn't say was we're never going to see a North American Union or a world government. He just said we're not probably going to see it in our lifetime. And I don't even believe that that's true. I think that right now, with things like the G20 being called and the climate conference that happened in Copenhagen in 2009, we do have a semblance of world governance right now. And, you know, some people think that that's necessary. Other people think that, you know, the best way to maintain your rights as an individual is to maintain your sovereign rights as a country. And, you know, it's a really hard balance, because when you get countries that are committing, you know, acts of genocide like what happened in Rwanda, you want the international community to be able to go in and intervene and stop that slaughter of humanity. But on the other hand, when you have countries being forced to agree to certain health policies, such as Codex Alimentarius, and it starts to get a little bit more insidious as to what the main goals of global governance are going to be. And the biggest problem is there's no mitigation for that power structure. how do you go to a world government and say, look, I live in a little small community in southern Ontario, and I want to make changes just to my little community in terms of the water supply, and they say, sorry, but that's an international policy that we've agreed to uphold, and we are dedicated to upholding the international policies that we've signed to. And, you know, they're talking nowadays about something called enlightened sovereignty. I've heard that term been, you know, used by people like Paul Martin recently and John Chrétien, and, you know, even John Manley in our documentary talked about it, you know, how sovereignty isn't the be-all and end-all anymore, and that, you know, sovereignty needs to be redefined. And when they were first starting to implement things like NAFTA and the Free Trade Agreement, they made, you know, promises to people that this is not going to affect your sovereignty. And what's happened is after they implement these policies, they kind of go back on it and say, okay, well, maybe it did affect your sovereignty, but let's start redefining what the word sovereignty means so that it doesn't mean the same thing anymore. It's straight out of 1984, straight out of George Orwell's book, redefine the language so no one understands what the words mean anymore. It's the same thing with using the term conspiracy theory. Everyone hears that and automatically they think it means it's not true, it's just somebody making it up. But the word conspiracy is not a theory, it's a crime. If you look up an antitrust lawyer, they deal in conspiracies. That's their job. And there's conspiracies every single day to fix market prices, to fix oil prices, oil speculation conspiracies, financial regulation conspiracies that went on with the financial markets down in the U.S. I mean, there are criminal conspiracies that are going on all of the time, and all of this is simply investigative journalism, and what I'm constantly referring to now as resistance journalism. I think this is the rise of resistance journalism because no longer do the mainstream outlets are not the only ones with HD cameras. Now anybody out there with, you know, pretty much an iPhone 4 now can have a camera that can record HD and broadcast it on YouTube. And YouTube is becoming the outlet for people to get their information quicker than any other outlet. The internet is breaking news quicker than any other outlet. And that's why you're getting people trying to create these internet kill switches. And, you know, we need to regulate the internet, that, you know, there's cyber terrorists out there who are going to get you and shut your computer down. Well, no matter what type of regulations you put on, all you're going to do is create a criminal class. It's just like prohibition in the 30s. You know, people are always going to drink. People are always going to do drugs. And the fact that you're just making that a crime only creates a criminal class. That's how Al Capone came to rise. You know, if they didn't make prohibition in the 1930s, he wouldn't have been importing booze from Canada, and he wouldn't have been able to make so much money and get to the power level that he ended up being at. They created a criminal class by creating prohibition and new laws to make things illegal. And the same thing would happen with regulating the internet. I mean, the CRTC just tried to pass a ruling that got overthrown, where they wanted to regulate the amount that you could download and charge you more for downloading and try to put a cap on it and say, well, you know, it's got to do with your carbon footprint. The more you download, the more the computer runs, and the more bigger your carbon footprint is. So they're trying to constantly make commodities out of everything in the air now. You know, that carbon dioxide is a commodity. Well, trees use carbon dioxide, and they spit oxygen out. It's all part of the cycle of life. And if carbon dioxide is apparently what's causing global warming, well, then how come we had global warming periods like 500 years ago? There was like a 70-year global warming period where the Earth warmed up. I would probably look to the thing that causes a lot more heat than carbon dioxide, and we call that the sun. So I would tell people in about an hour or so to maybe look out the window, and they'll see a giant ball of light in the sky. That's probably going to have more of an effect on warming you up than, you know, breathing will. So
I agree, and carbon dioxide is only 4% of greenhouse gases, and humans contribute only a fraction of that. So scams upon scams upon scams. Mr. Brian Law from Press4Truth.ca, talented filmmaker, behind the films United We Fall and Into the Fire, the upcoming film where he's editing that with Dan Dix, also from Press4Truth.ca. And you know, Brian, it's amazing. When you put information like this out there, when you get into these things, this isn't like a hobby. This isn't like liking Justin Bieber or Star Trek or vampires. This stuff is dealing with issues that affect everybody. And you and Dan were recently in Wisconsin, and I'd like to take us to a clip of Mr. Webster Griffin Tarpley from Tarpley.net, T-A-R-P-L-E-Y.net, talking about what's going on in Wisconsin, talking about the concept of the protests there and what they have to accomplish. We see protests going on right now worldwide. They're going on in the Middle East. There's rising food prices. In a nutshell, this is affecting everybody. You know, our health, you know, in Canada, we're about half of us are expected to get cancer if you go to cancer.ca. Around the world, there's the global recession. The CBC is having news stories saying Canadians are too much in debt. With an average of $100,000 debt load, Canadians are way too heavily in debt. You know what you should do? Start cutting back and stop eating out as much. And so we're literally losing our living standards through this process, which essentially means that we are advocating for not just the rights of a certain group of individuals, but for everybody in our society. And so I'm going to let Webster Griffin Tarpley explain a bit more about how we can get more of that information out there and a real alternative program to what's being offered by the system.
Nationwide open-ended general strike in support of the Wisconsin demonstrations. However, we need it on the basis of a program of political demands. And this is the thing that we want to address in this program. It's great to say we're supporting the strike. We're in full solidarity with the Wisconsin demonstrations. Yes, we are. We are all those things and more. But now is the hour not of delivering soup and coffee to a picket line. You can do that too. But political strike support. Strike support based on a program, based on a strategy, something that can expand the support for this movement, spread it, expand it, get beyond the existing divisions. Right now, it's a strike, apparently, of school teachers, some government employees of the state of Wisconsin. This is too narrow. It's got to go to other states, but even within Wisconsin, if you want to make this a pilot project, the public workers are great. They've got to be joined by private sector workers. Where are the private sector unions? Where are the unemployed? Who's organizing the unemployed? And who's speaking up for their interests? How about the 99ers? What are you saying for the 99ers, you guys in Wisconsin? And then, of course, in the society we live in today, we have retired people. What are you doing for them? Are you demanding no cuts in Social Security, no cuts in Medicare, no cuts in Medicaid? That also feeds then into the unemployed. How about students? The students are there, but are there some demands that could express their needs? Things like a free college education for everybody, relief on student loans, 0% interest on student loans. These are the questions of political strike support, and it means a program, which is not just a program, but it's also a strategy, because your program, in addition to addressing the actual process of restarting an economy, which has been slammed by an unprecedented world economic depression, Wall Street bubble, derivatives orgy. You've also got to make sure that those demands are intelligible to the other people, the other groups in the society that you want to bring in. Nothing is more guaranteed to lose than a narrow trade union approach. Now, already with Wisconsin, the approach is already implicitly political, but it's got to be made explicitly political. And at this point, we have to be very categorical. The issue of the Wall Street sales tax, the Tobin tax, the Robin Hood tax, the securities transfer tax, the trading tax, the financial turnover tax, that Wall Street sales tax is the key to victory or defeat. If the people in Wisconsin can educate themselves under these conditions of crisis to understand why you've got to shift the burden of the depression off the backs of working people, be they state or private or unemployed or retired or students or military anybody, onto the backs of the Wall Street hyenas who created the crisis. That's got to be it in a nutshell. Who should pay for the depression? Depressions are expensive. Their cost is in the quadrillions. Who should pay? Well, Wall Street should pay. How are you going to do that? You've got to have some intelligible way of making that understandable and then implementing it in the form of legislation. Let's look at the program. You've got to have something broader than just the immediate question of trade union rights and the cuts, although those have to be included in the program most emphatically. The key to this is, you've got to express not just the immediate interest of your own group. You've got to express one of the basic survival needs of the entire society, so that you can actually say, honestly, and in the real world, my fight is the defense of the entire society.
And we're back, folks, speaking with Brian Law from Press4Truth.ca, director of the film United We Fall. And this is the music by Dan Dix, producer of United We Fall. While we're here, Brian, we were just talking off air a bit about protests, about what's happening around the world and in the Middle East. You know, both of us, like everybody else, of good conscience, is sympathetic with the desires of people in these countries to affect change. But both of us also realize that, you know, with the heavy promotion of the protests by our own media and with some of the stories about top executives at Google being behind some of the protests, Mohammed Al-Baradei, top globalist from the International Atomic Energy Agency, being behind much of what happened in Egypt, and plans to destabilize the Middle East and to set up essentially the clash of civilizations by having the Muslim Brotherhood shadow group behind the scenes, allegedly working with British intelligence and the CIA historically, set up regimes that are hostile to the West overseas. And then you have Pastor Lindsay Williams talking about $200 a barrel oil when it's now at about just under $100 a barrel, and talking about how the plan is to dump the U.S. dollar and to basically screw the Arab nations by making all their paper holdings of paper money worthless as the world switches over into an SDR, a new global currency. And so this is all supposedly coming up, and Pastor Lindsay Williams worked with a bunch of top oil executives, so they leaked a lot of, and some still leak a lot of information to him. So what we have here is we have people taken to the streets over rising food prices and horrible economic conditions worldwide, and we have, and yet as it says in the Bible, and as other people have said, the people perish for a lack of knowledge. And so thank you for doing your part as a filmmaker to spread some of that knowledge, you know, in ways that make it easier and easier for people to understand, because people have to understand that people have been trying to explain this New World Order problem of central banking families who print money from nothing to buy control over the world and consolidate their power and control over everybody for about 50 years. And people like yourself, who are young and who are hip revolutionary filmmakers, have made it easier than ever to understand. And speaking of that, there was the G20 martial law situation, where there was a G20 summit held in Toronto in June of 2010. And now, coming in 2011, on the heels of a fair amount of coverage about that, a definitive editorial take on it from Press4Truth that is giving you the best and most honest look possible. Tell us about your experiences of the G20, and tell us about a film called Into the Fire.
Sure. I mean, my experiences at the G20, I mean, you know, I went into it knowing that, you know, there was going to be a large police force in the city at that time, and that, you know, they were obviously looking to protect the event as much as they could. They had a gigantic Berlin Wall set up that I'm sure everybody in the city remembers. But what I didn't expect was kind of what unraveled there, with the amount of draconian rule that went on behalf of the police. What we saw in was essentially martial law in downtown Toronto. The police had full authority to arrest anybody for pretty much any reason. If they refused to identify themselves, they could search your bags without any warrant or without any grounds, just simply the fact that you had a backpack on. They were searching a lot of people who were wearing black, and all of these have been determined to be, you know, unconstitutional, if not outright illegal, in our country. And it was just shocking for me. You know, my father's a retired police officer, so I've been around police for my entire life. I've never been in trouble with the police, and, you know, I was scared in my own city. For the first time, I was not looking at the police as, you know, a means of protection from the criminals out there, but I was looking at the police as the criminals themselves. Like, who do you go to when you're being chased by, you know, like 1,000 cops dressed in riot gear who are chasing you down the street. Who can you call anymore? Who can you go and say, like, help me from these people who are hitting me and forcing me off of public areas? So it was a very scary time, and it was only after that, you know, that we were able to put together the full story of what happened, because after that weekend, you know, I'd really only seen it through my lens and through my eyes, so it was very confusing after the weekend happened to kind of figure out how was it that 1,100 people got arrested, and of those 300 charges were initially laid, and of those, there's only about 90 charges outstanding still. So that's a very, very, even if they convict all of those people, that is a very, very poor arrest rate to conviction rate. I mean, 1,100 people to 90 convictions, well, that means that almost 1,000 people were wrongfully arrested and then let go. I mean, this is you can't have this type of stuff in a country that, you know, claims to be a free country and the true north, strong and free, you know, and we have a Charter of Rights and Freedoms. We need to make sure that we're upholding that, because it's very important that everybody in this country is given equal rights and looked at equally before the law. And if you're assumed to be guilty simply because you're wearing black or because you're walking around in an area that they've determined that you're not supposed to be in, it's a very dangerous trend to give the police this much power and authority. And I'd like to thank everybody out there. If anybody's listening who tunes into our stuff and who has helped us by giving us some footage, you know, thank you very much, because we wouldn't have been able to assemble the full story of what happened during the G20 if it wasn't for, you know, independent media outlets like the Real News Network places like InfoWars that were coming down to go and cover this type of stuff, or Russia Today that was covering a lot of this type of stuff as well, completely independent civilian, or sorry, I shouldn't say civilian, that's a military term, citizen-based news outlets, just simply people with a YouTube channel that wanted to have an effect in their community and were filming and putting this stuff up, because we were able to kind of put together the entire story from beginning to end of what happened, and we interviewed a lot of people, and the stories, no matter who they were, if they were a person my age, a 26-year-old guy, or if there was somebody who were, you know, in their mid to late 60s, the story was the same coming from them of their experience at the G20. And we put a call out there for anybody, including police officers, to come forward and do interviews with us. We didn't receive any interviews from police officers, but the stories we got from people on the street were remarkably similar in the fact that they were all basically scared senseless of the police that weekend, and it was a fear tactic. We saw, you know, people getting arrested for simply being in an intersection and then, you know, being told that they were going to be arrested for the thought crime of conspiracy to commit mischief, that they were about to commit a crime, so we're going to arrest you preemptively before you commit the crime. And you just can't do that in Canada. There's no grounds to go and arrest somebody for a crime that they haven't committed. And so, you know, thanks to everybody out there, and stay tuned on pressfortruth.ca, and we're going to be having a screening of this film, hopefully at the Bloor Cinema, as soon as we can get it all finished and ready to go. And as soon as we can get all the rest of the Freedom of Information Act footage released of Charlie Veach and anybody else out there who wants to get in contact with us, who wants their footage released via Freedom of Information Act, you can contact us through the Press for Truth website, or you can get me directly at brian.law@mail.com. That's brian.law@mail.com. And I would be more than happy to shoulder the costs and help you to get this footage released via Freedom of Information Act, now that I know the process to go and do this. And I think it's going to be really important for people to see this footage going forward, to know what really happened at G20 in Toronto.
It's amazing. Brian Law from pressfortruth.ca. The police have basically, the state, the corporate bankster state, states worldwide, governments worldwide have basically built up armies of police to deal with riots that are supposed to be taking place around this time throughout the world. And so you saw that, and as you said, the police don't normally act like that. They don't normally eye people up. They don't normally arrest 1,100 people while only being able to charge, you know, 90 of them. So they don't normally have mass arrests. They don't normally have concentration camps like Guantanamo Bay set up by the docks. And I'd heard that many police were not happy about this, and police were leaking to, including others, Joe Warmington of the Toronto Sun, right after the weekend protest took place, claiming that they were ordered to stand down and not stop the Black Bloc protest terrorist tourists. that were breaking everything. And yet, and a lot of discussion is focused on the police when there were military, intelligence, and private contractors there as well as other political forces responsible for these conditions. But you guys had a team of 15 people on the scene getting yourselves footage, plus all the footage you got, plus the mass media, to their credit, did a decent job, in some respects, in terms of covering this. Any thoughts on the impact on the city? You know, the psychological impact. You obviously dealt with a lot of people that were, familiar with what happened at the G20 from one angle or another. Do you think that this is a pivotal moment in Toronto history and in Canadian history where people kind of say, oh, police state, I see what you guys are talking about, and it may be time for us to get a bit more active in preventing this from getting worse?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a certain psychological impact on people that, I know a number of people who said, that they don't want to go out to protest anymore, that it scared them. But I also know a number of people who had no idea before the G20 happened what the G20 was even about, and it's made protesters out of them. So they've actually created a whole bunch of people out there who are now politically active because of how they were treated at the G20. People who had no idea or really even cared about this stuff anymore are finally starting to say, I used to go and say that, I didn't care about any of this stuff, but now that it's happened to me, they see the personal effect that it's going to happen in the future if you don't do something to protect this. So for people out there who weren't in the city, who are kind of looking at the evening news, what you probably saw was a burning car. What you didn't see was the fact that that burning car was left there for 7 hours, abandoned by the police that were 19,000 strong, and they were abandoning it to, a group of 500 people, of which, five or six of those people were, 15, 16-year-old kids that, had a grudge against the police and wanted to wreck the cars. And what do you expect to happen when you leave police vehicles abandoned in an area for hours on end? I mean, you can't expect when you leave the doors unlocked that people are not going to open it up, turn the sirens on, turn the lights on, smash the windows out. I mean, it's a symbol. It's a symbol of rebellion. It's a symbol of overthrowing oppressors, if you view the police that way, to wreck their police vehicle. And it seemed that the mainstream media was just showing the burning cars so that people watching at home would think that downtown Toronto was a war zone, which would justify everything that the police did afterwards. And that's why we named the film Into the Fire, because we're kind of looking into the reason that these fires happened and that people saw this at home, and it was a symbol to people on the evening news and psychological conditioning to say, those protesters are dangerous, they all need to be arrested. Meanwhile, of the 25,000 people that were out to protest, and of the 1,100 people that were actually arrested, approximately 50 to 75 of those people were actually involved in any sort of black bloc anarchist strategies of destroying stuff. And I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there who support the black bloc strategy. I'm not personally a supporter of that strategy because I don't see the logic in destroying corporate property and then public gets charged for it anyways when they charge people public money to replace the stuff that was broken on private property. But, I mean, I do support people's right to go out and protest, and if they believe that the black bloc strategy is a legitimate protest strategy, well, they're taking the risk of getting arrested for criminal activity, and they'll have to bear that. But I stand with anybody who's out there to go and protest for people's rights and for our rights in Canada here, because we are, as I said before, we are the true north, strong and free, and I think maintaining our sovereignty and maintaining our rights to control our resources in our country is going to be paramount to raising our children in the future and maintaining a free country in the future.
Well, absolutely, Brian, and I think protest and the protest model is something that's been around for a while, and it's something that we need to consider, because it's, you need to get people together just to show we're not alone. Otherwise, sometimes you feel very, very lonely in these pursuits. But then there is the information war strategy, so everybody gets knowledgeable about what to ask their politicians for. And I would suggest to people out there in CKLN Radio listener land, listen to this interview with Brian Law, director, editor, producer of the films United We Fall and Into the Fire, with his colleague Dan Dix at pressfortruth.ca. So check out pressfortruth.ca for more. I would suggest you buy copies of these DVDs off the filmmakers. You, with their explicit permission, get a DVD burner, make copies of these films, and pass them out to all your friends, and encourage them to support the filmmakers by buying their own copies and doing the same, because the more people that we can get to see this information, the more we have a chance to make better decisions when it comes to pushing for policies. If our backs are against the wall and we decide to run with the bulls in Spain, by testing, the police state conditions, we can see what the state has trained them to do. I mean, they trained for the G20 protest like a football game. They were looking at, every one of us like we were, the ball they had to jump on top of and tackle. Whereas if you take a different approach and you say to the police and you say to your neighbors and you say to your politicians and you say to everybody who's a stakeholder in your culture, look, I just want you to check this out. From one Canadian to another, I'd like you to take a look at this, 1.5 or 2 hour movie about issues that affect all of us now. And now that they're messing with our money, now things are looking increasingly uncertain. Brian, what are your thoughts on the InfoWar here 11 years deep into the 21st century, just before 2012? And do you see people as being more open to this information than ever as a filmmaker yourself who's working on producing some of the best material available on these issues?
Yeah, I think there is a revolution going on in terms of this info war. I think people are ready and more receptive to this type of information now, and it's really exciting because when I first started into this, it was really hard to find anybody that you could talk about these issues with that would understand what you're talking about. And now with all of the resistance journalism that has risen up ever since, especially since the global financial collapse, you've had a number of people who have finally been able to relate to these issues through their own personal stories. I mean, that some people aren't really receptive to the idea of police state. Other people aren't really receptive to health issues, and it's just finding that key way to get into somebody's head and be able to go and tell them, look, you have children, right? Well, your children go to a public school. Well, here's some of the things they're being taught at school by their teachers. Here's some of the indoctrination they're being taught by their teachers at school. And that's the easiest way to get a hold of a culture, is get a hold of their children, and you can teach them whatever you want at public schools. Or here's what your children are being injected with in their vaccines. Or here's the type of things you're breathing in your air, or what you're eating in your genetically modified foods. I mean, everybody is affected by this, whether they want to accept that or not. We're all being affected by these global implementation strategies like Codex Alimentarius of the World Health Organization, the World Trade Organization policies, and it's just how to find that in with your friends and family. And I always think it's just important to talk about this with your friends and family. You don't have to go out and talk with strangers about this. Talk with people you know that you already have a relationship with, because they're going to trust you more and they're going to trust what you're talking about more. And you're never really going to get everybody on the same page. I mean, and I wouldn't even try and strive for that. The idea is just to open up the debate and start talking about these issues instead of allowing ourselves to be apathetic and not talk about anything because we're too scared to go and talk about it. And it's empowering once you actually start to take your own life into your hands, and you start to refuse simple things like, handing over identification to police for no reason whatsoever. Even though you've got nothing to hide, try once or twice just refusing that authority, because they actually don't have that authority just to ID you randomly on the street. If you refuse them that authority and start questioning the authority of your politicians and start questioning the authority of officers in uniform and start questioning the authority of certain groups to implement health policies on you that you think are unjust, you're taking control over your own life bit by bit by bit. And I think, this info war is going to continue to get bigger and bigger and bigger as the years go by, and I hope that they're not going to pass any sort of internet kill switch bills that are going to stop the free flow of information to people. And we at PressForTruth.ca encourage people to spread around the information, spread it for free, burn DVDs, get it out there for free, and that's why we put our films online for people to watch, because the real payoff is going to be to see people start to resist, because you need to remember that you are the resistance in this. Every one of us is part of this resistance, and that's what resistance journalism is all about, resisting draconian measures that are being implemented slowly as we're being convinced that, we need to give up our rights to be safe, and, we have nothing to hide, therefore there should be no concern about walking around with an RFID chip in your wallet or possibly even on your person in the future. And there should be no concern about the big Orwellian police state that's being set up and the Big Brother surveillance system that's being set up where you're being monitored all the time. It's all a form of control. And to refuse this control is the first step in resisting. So I'm really proud to be part of this movement, and I'm really proud to see that a lot of people are helping make this a mainstream issue and not some sort of a fringe issue that it constantly gets relegated as, you know, that it's a fringe group, it doesn't really matter, and that we're at the edges of society that no one really listens. Well, you know, there's enough of us now that people are starting to listen and realize that these aren't issues to be frightened of anymore. These are just regular issues that we need to start tackling seriously. And, you know, find the in with your friends and family. And as I said before, you are the resistance.
Absolutely. Wise words from Mr. Brian Law, filmmaker behind United We Fall and Into the Fire from Press4Truth.ca. I agree with you. I just got an email from a listener yesterday to the show. Shout-outs to Chris. And he told me that a friend of his, their child was sent home for 20 days because they refused to get the diphtheria vaccine, the DPT, diphtheria pertussis something or other. And so he passed on the legal vaccine exemption forms. They got them notarized and they got them and they got their kid back in school without having to take the shot. So, you know, we can inform each other of so many things. And Brian, I'd like to thank you so much for being on air this morning, for informing us. For you listeners out there who don't know, we are doing this interview without headphones, sharing one microphone, as we have a couple of technical difficulties here at the station. But hopefully you enjoyed today's show and you enjoyed what we were talking about. So, Brian, from PressForTruth.ca, good luck with continued promotions of United We Fall, and good luck with preparations for promoting Into the Fire. I recommend everyone check PressForTruth.ca for more details.
Yes, thanks for having me on, and it's good to hear that you guys here were able to overturn the CRTC ruling and get back on the air, because we need more stations like this to be talking about issues like this that are going to affect all of us. So thanks for having us on, and everybody that's out there listening, keep fighting the good fight, I guess.
There it is, and you can check out more of Brian's great work at PressForTruth.ca, as mentioned before on the show. I'd like to thank him so much for this interview, and just remind you folks out there of a couple of websites before we go. PressForTruth.ca, obviously, for some amazing videos on the G20, on the North American Union, and on many, many other issues of relevance to Canadians, which is why they are such a well-respected independent journalism company. Infowars.com for a great overview of what's going on in the world, including SAS troops, special commandos, now being deployed to protests and on the streets of London, England. So you can see that the state is gearing up for a big fight with a bunch of people. So if we are going to take to the streets, let's make sure everyone around us is informed, and let's make sure that we have a clear mandate that we're pushing for that everyone can support, that benefits everyone in our culture. Check out naturalnews.com for great health info, trendsresearch.com for Gerald Celente's excellent work on upcoming financial trends here in 2011 and into 2012. VRAN.org for those aforementioned legal vaccine exemption forms. They're free, they're legal, get them notarized, and do not get shot. Done a lot of work on this over the last few years, so still strongly recommend it. FluorideAlert.org, Montreal, Vancouver, Calgary, Waterloo, Ontario. Do not use fluoride. It's about time Toronto stopped and Ottawa stopped as well, because most of Europe doesn't use it either. So go to FluorideAlert.org for more information. If we share enough of that info, then we can get the political push and the political will to get it out of our water supply. Locally, TorontoTruthSeekers.com, great place to network on these issues with other truth seekers. ConspiracyCulture.com, book and DVD store at Queen and Roncesvalles. Definitely check them out. Tons of info on these issues, and you can be selective. These days there's so much out there that there's something to appeal to everyone. And Victor Fletcher's venerable Toronto street newspaper out there. Flip a homeless guy a toonie and hook him up with a coffee and yourself up with some great information. Also, amazing stuff. The Corbett Report, Stefan Molyneux, Frito-Maine Radio, the Truther Girls out of Montreal, got a shout-out to them. Ottawa Change, doing great work. Vancouver 9/11 Truth. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of Canadians working on the biggest problems of globalization we face, and who are basically have a jump on the fight to preserve our living standards in this recession and against the forces of globalization. So it's time that we respect what they're up to, and it's time that we share what they're up to, and it's time we find our own voices in the InfoWar with the help of some great translations out there. So once again, thanks to Brian Law from PressForTruth.ca for the interview. Mr. Bill Watson, a.k.a. Senor William Watsoni, is up next with your four-hour jazz bungee experience. Enjoy, everybody. Take care and have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Peace out.
Yes, live free.